Okie dokie, it is October 12th at 1300 for the military types, 1 o'clock Eastern for everybody else. I'm gonna move quickly because there's more news this time and more interesting stuff this time than I think there has ever been in quite a while. Number one, I would like to say that my heart goes out to everyone who is dealing with the Israeli Hamas conflict. Terrorism is absolutely abhorrent, and I hope the people that are conducting the terrorist actions get what they so rightfully deserve, and may God be with everybody over there. It's terrible. We have a lot of Israeli people in cyberspace, and I can't even imagine what they're going through. So my heart goes out to you, and I do pray every day. So I will say another prayer for those folks. Anyway, I am not a Middle East expert. I'm barely a cyber expert. So let's get going through this. I don't know why my camera gets all weird and whatever else, but like it does strange camera things. Anyway, let's see what's going on. This article here showed up in Wired magazine, and it's interesting from the perspective of cyber warfare. So activist hackers are racing into the Israel-Hamas war for both sides. This was as of October 9th, Lily Hay Newman and Matt Burgess. Since the conflict escalated, hackers have targeted dozens of government websites and media outlets with defacements and DDoS attacks and attempted to overload targets with jump traffic to bring them down, which is a DDoS attack. Within hours of Hamas militants and rockets entering Israel, such hacktivist attacks started to spring up against both Israeli and Palestinian websites and applications. In the short period since the conflict escalated, hackers have targeted dozens of government websites and media outlets with defacements and DDoS attacks, attempts to overload targets with junk traffic, which is DDoS, and bring them down. Some groups claim to have stolen data, probably attacked internet service providers, okay, sure, and even claim to have hacked the Israeli missile alert service known as Red Alert, which I believe there was a news article about that they had a false alarm about an airstrike the other day. So maybe that's possible. I saw at least 60 websites get DDoS attacks, says Will Thomas, a member of the cybersecurity team from Equinix. Half of those are Israeli government sites. I've seen at least 5 sites be defaced showing free Palestine related messages. So there's more here. Like I always do, I'll put some stuff in this articles and links at the end of this. But I mean, this is warfare in the 21st century is really what this is. This is what this looks like. We saw it with Estonia. We saw it with Ukraine. We've seen it with a variety of organizations. And it's just very, very interesting that the things are changing so fast. I don't know where the difference is coming from, but it is super interesting to see the changes that are taking place and the speed with which they are. There is a lot of stuff bouncing around, disinformation campaigns, malinformation campaigns, etc. It's hard to know what is fact and what is truth and what is not. And again, I can't imagine if you were actually in that area trying to deal with this stuff, how would you make a decision? But cyber warfare is the bridge between espionage and kinetic operations. And this is something for the US to know and think about is when we start seeing real digital saber rattling, sites going down, infrastructure being messed with, lots and lots of escalation of activity, that's when stuff gets sideways quick. That means that there's probably a kinetic attack coming after that. The indications and warnings, what we used to call those when I was active duty. There is some interesting stuff here too. Recorded Future was talking about, I've identified 3 subsets of activity within pandemonium of Israel-Hamas war. The majority of the digital attacks seem to stem from pre-existing groups or a broader context of similar activity adjacent to other conflicts. The subgroups that Recorded Future has identified are self-proclaimed Islamic hacktivists that report to Palestine. These groups have historically targeted India and have been found around for years. Pro-Russian hacktivists that are pivoting to target Israel, likely with the intent of sowing chaos and spreading Russian state narratives and groups that are new and that they were launched in the last few days, but they had activities that came before this. Since Russia's 2022 invasion of Ukraine, prominent hacktivist groups backing Russian interests have emerged, including gangs known as Anonymous Sudan, which is not from Sudan, and Killnet, which you've probably heard of, both of which appear to wade in the conflict currently going on between Hamas and Israel. This weekend, some groups have also been active in reaction to India's support of Israel, both in favor. So it's lots of disinformation. It's lots of back and forth. This is a really interesting article, but point being, you've got nation states that are involved with this. It is not just Hamas, Hezbollah, Israel. It is those groups plus Iranian factions that are showing up, plus Russian factions that are showing up. I haven't read anything or seen anything that says that there's anything going on from China in there, but I wouldn't put it past the opportunist nature of the CCP to try and do something in this space. There's just, you know, things for them that could be valuable. So, yeah, again, praying for y'all folks. I thought that this was interesting. Google published this. It was Perspectives on Security for the Board. This comes from the Cybersecurity Action Team at Google, and it's actually really well written. It talks about kind of breaking down things. There's the whole thing on navigating the global threat landscape. It talks about how to talk to the board about infections and proliferation and whatever else. You know, it says literally, here's questions you can ask. Ask your CIO, CTO, CISO. What is our strategy? Can we approach authentication bypassing it? Does that help with our risk? So there's all these words that show up in here that you hear about that boards would have the conversation about, but a lot of us in cyber don't typically talk about. So I think this is a valuable piece of literature for everybody to go look at because it's coming from Google, who does a lot of really big time work, and they're deeply entrenched in the space around cyber. But there's communication guides in this. Board Ready for Crisis Communication Response in the Digital Age is on page 7. It talks about, you know, the way to do crisis communications response. If you've never been involved in a real crisis, if you're not whiteboarding for it, if you're not gaming for it and things do go wrong, the time to be figuring out how to respond and manage the chaos is not during the damn incident. So you have to do this stuff before. And the fact that Google's cyber action team is telling us literally in here, well, I mean, I'm reading word for word, ask your C-suite, IT and security CISO leadership, these questions. So there you go. So if you're looking for some help, talking to the board, talking to executives that aren't in cyber, here's a good paper to go look at. There's also a page 10 here, talks about AI and red teaming, you know, tells you what to do. Tells you things to consider, how to put it in action, et cetera. So solid report, something worth looking at, reading. You know, take a little bit of time out of your day and give that, you know, 15 minutes, 10 minutes, whatever. It's worth it, I promise you. And like I say, I'll put the links to this at the end of it as well. Top 10 cyber breaches for the first half of 2023. This is in Property Casualty 360, which is interesting. I'll throw the link in here to it. It is behind a paywall, but it's just interesting because these are mortgage folks and insurance people. And when you look at what they classify as the top 10 breaches are not what everybody else would classify as the top 10 breaches. So what's the nuance that's going on there? Why is that the thing? Following on to that, there's an article, Esure.ai, which I guess is a company. I guess they're coming out of stealth, but this was interesting because it showed up. So Esure.ai debuts first all-in-one home cybersecurity insurance solution. They talk about help us bust the antivirus myth, choose the real way to real digital freedom. Okay. Let's see. So Esure.ai has launched the industry's first all-in-one cyber insurance and enterprise cybersecurity solution for home that's designed to combat the increasing number of attacks against home computers in the hybrid work area. There's a lot of words being mushed into that, but sure. The platform features next-generation deep learning-based endpoint protection, 24/7 security operations support, and $1 million in cyber insurance coverage delivered in a flexible monthly online subscription model. Interesting. tempting. I mean, so it's enterprise quote grade cybersecurity insurance and solution via a partnership with Deep Instinct for home. Consumers, particularly those who work from home, are increasingly victims of cyber attacks. By the way, you guys should look at your grammar, because some of your grammar on this thing is kind of jacked up. Anyway, where large businesses have staff and solutions to prevent attacks, consumers are much more exposed, working on less secure wireless networks connected to vulnerable IoT devices. Every endpoint is a target. This is where the majority of ransomware extortion attacks occur, okay? Esure.ai is partnered with Deep Instinct, the prevention-first cybersecurity company that stops unknown malware pre-execution, holy marketing, blah, 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 with a purpose-built learning DL framework to build the most advanced AI-powered, cybersecurity prevention service for the consumer market. Esure.ai integrated Deep Instinct technology with its 24/7 security operations, enabling around-the-clock monitoring and protection of home devices to prevent cyber attack. Mm-hmm. I don't think that this is wrong, because they talk about why they're doing it. Great, you're trying to help people and whatever else, but this is kind of all over the place. I don't know that this is necessary, is the thing. Like, if you're somebody that's doing, you know, the cyber stuff from home, your company's probably going to provide you with a lot of what you would need to be secure. As long as you enable it and leverage it, you should be okay. And we all have all this training and education and whatever else that's supposed to keep us safer and more secure. So, like, what's the value for the average user? Anybody that knows a lot about the insurance side of this or the legal side, please DM me, because I don't understand why you would necessarily be liable for an infection occurring on your home network that went to the business. There's so much gray area in here. It's very, very all over the place. But I mean, they came out of stealth, they got funding, so somebody believes in it. Microsoft Defender now auto-isolates compromised accounts. Now it's October 2023. Why did it take so long for this to be a thing? Microsoft Defender for Endpoint now uses automatic attack disruption to isolate compromised user accounts and block lateral movement in hands-on keyboard attacks, with the help of a new contained user capability in public preview. In such incidents like those involving human-operated ransomware, I mean, ransomware that a human is managing, I think, threat actors infiltrate networks, move laterally, and escalate privilege via stolen credentials and deploy malicious payloads. According to Microsoft, Defender for Endpoint now prevents attackers' lateral movement attempts within victims' on-premises or cloud infrastructure by temporarily isolating the compromised user accounts they might exploit to achieve their objectives. Okay. Now, here's where it gets a little bit more interesting. Attack disruption achieves an outcome by containing compromises across all devices, outmaneuver attackers before they have the chance to act maliciously, okay? Said Rob Lefferts, corporate vice president for Microsoft 365 Security. This on-by-default capability will identify if the compromised user has any associated activity with any other endpoint and immediately cut off all inbound and outbound comms. So, good idea. I'd be interested to see this in play, because turn this on, well, it's on by default, I guess, and watch what happens to your stuff when somebody who has a legitimate thing going on, their shit gets bricked. So when an identity is contained, any supported Defender for Endpoint onboard device or onboarded device will block incoming traffic and specific protocols related to attacks. Logons, RPC, SMB, RDP, while enabling legitimate traffic. So I guess the only legitimate traffic that you would see there would be port 80 or 443. I don't know. I'd have to see this in play to actually get the value of it, but it's definitely interesting that there is a that talks about how this works. Check it out. It's interesting. That's where I'll leave that. Yeah. Yes. I'm going to move onward from this and go a little bit down in the rabbit hole with a recent publication from actually Microsoft as well. It's their Digital Defense Report. This is 131 pages. I read it the other day. It's a pretty solid piece of content, and you can get this from their site. I'll put links to it out there, but basically they go through what would typically be about 3 months worth of research to get this together. They did a lot of work for this, but introduction, state of cybercrime, nation states, critical cybersecurity challenges, innovating for security and resilience, collective defense, and then appendix. But when you go through here, it also tells you, like, look, here's the data that we looked at: 65 trillion signals synthesized daily, 10,000 security and threat experts, 4,000 identity attacks per second, 300 threat actors tracked plus, 100,000 domains plus removed, 135 million managed devices. So lots of information, lots of telemetry. But here's what was most interesting to me was right off the bat. I'm actually going to pirate this and use it in some of my slides. It's how can we protect against 99% of attacks, right? And here's what they said. While we explore the many dimensions of cyber threat landscape, there's one crucial point we must emphasize across them all. The vast majority of successful cyber attacks could be thwarted by implementing a few fundamental security hygiene practices. By adhering to these minimum security standards, it's possible to protect against about 99% of attacks. Do the basics, do them well, take care of 99% of the problem. Enable multi-factor authentication, yes. Apply zero trust principles, yes. Use extended detection and response anti-malware solutions. Okay, sure. Keep up to date. Patch your shit. Protect data. All of those actually fall under the whole ZT thing. So you could have just said do ZT to save 99% of the attacks. But hey, here you have it. So how effective is MFA at deterring cyber attacks? A recent study based on real-world attack data from Microsoft Entra found that MFA reduces the risk of a compromise by 99.2%. So, I mean, like I said, all the data that's showing up in here, trillions of signals, 10,000 security experts, 100,000 domains, 135 million managed devices. You take all that stuff and you boil it down and it comes down to this. And they're saying flat out, like, look, here's the data. Here's the research. 99.2% can be solved with applying these basic, simple things. You don't need to ask the question anymore about, like, what do we do first? Where do we fix? What's the simple problems to solve? It's here. Like, cybersecurity as a strategy, if you approach it intelligently and stop thinking about never having a breach, because a breach is a given, you start thinking about the right way to leverage the right solutions that cause change and actually take the adversary's advantage away. It's a solvable problem. The technology exists in the space to do this stuff. Is it hard to do this at scale with a giant company? Sure. I know I've talked to the Microsoft CISO. He's doing it for his entire company. Google did it for Google's entire employee base with their Beyond Corp, which is a ZT rollout. This is doable, folks. Like, that's what's up. This is a good report. Read it. I would say it's solid enough that if you're doing briefings and whatever, pillage some of this stuff, because it's out there, it's solid, and it's very, very data-driven, which was what impressed me. A couple more things that I read in here that were of interest. 80 to 90% of all successful ransomware compromises originate through unmanaged devices. Now, what they also should say is 80 to 90% of ransomware invokes PowerShell, but that's another story. Passwords-based attacks spiked in 2023. Again, hashtag kill the passwords. 70% of organizations encountering human-operated malware had fewer than 500 employees. So there's your small and mid-sized business stuff. Human-operated ransomware attacks are up more than 200%. Why? Because they make money at it. Like, if there's money there, what was the Willie Sutton thing? Why rob banks? Because that's where the money is. I mean, here you go. Yeah. So this is good stuff. Look it up. The last one that I kind of wanted to get into is the research that we published at G2 very recently. It was our trends, because you can't be an analyst in the space if you don't publish your pontifications and your trends on what's coming and whatever else. I'll put the stuff in here, but the way that I looked at this was I looked at, and I worked with the folks that were doing such great research at G2, and we looked at the last 3 years worth of compromised data from Verizon, Dibber, Mandy and M-Trends, and two or three other reports, and we boiled it down to say, well, where are the adversaries most successful? And there's charts in here that'll show you, here's what they do, here's where they're most successful, okay? On the other side of that, well, what would I do to solve those problems? I would do these things, right? Like multi-factor, kill the VPN, all those. It's super clear, and the trends only changed, I think we saw, between like 2-3% over the course of the last 3 years. It's the same shit every time all around. That's just what it is, because people don't do the basics very well. Now, on top of that, when you look at the trends, like what we predicted was that a lot of the same stuff will occur. However, because we have commoditized the attack vectors so much now, it's going to get worse on the scope and scale and breadth of the attacks that we see. You're going to see more stuff moving down market. You're going to see ransomware operations grow larger because it is so commoditized. And this whole thing about machine learning and large language models and quote AI, even though it's not AI, the days of the easy to identify threat vectors and phishing emails and vishing is gone. I did a little test yesterday where I had ChatGPT or GPT-4 write me a phishing email in Cyrillic. I don't speak Russian. I don't speak a lick of Russian. Не очень хорошо. Like, so I can say a couple things, but I don't speak Russian. But it wrote it for me, and I ran it through a couple of other things, and guess what? It was accurate. It was correct. So if I can do that for Cyrillic, why can't someone use the same thing and translate Cyrillic into English and have a really good phishing email? We are past the days of thinking security training and education is going to fix this problem. If you're not engaged in some of the technologies that we suggest in this predictions report, you're making a mistake. I think it's kind of time to just stop being so coy with everybody and be like, look, there's things that are worth your investment, things that aren't. Look at the metrics, look at the data, look at the reality, and then apply fixes based on that. Other than that, you're just scratching your ass in the wind. And then you're probably sniffing your fingers and going, man, this smells like shit, because that's what happens. So anyway, I got other things I could get into, but I wanted to keep this a little bit shorter than normal. I know people have got a lot of things going on. I know there's some folks from overseas in Israel that might be listening to this. Again, prayers for you guys. I can't even wrap my head around what's going on there, but God bless. As always, stay smart, stay safe, stay secure, keep your head on a swivel, and I'll catch you on the next one. Disclaimer, the information in this podcast episode, aka episode, is provided for general information purposes only. By listening to this episode, you understand that this is not specific technical guidance from the host. No information contained in this episode should be construed as security advice from the author, host, or guest, nor is it intended to be a substitute for security advice on any particular subject matter. No listener of this episode should act or refrain from acting on the basis of any information included in or accessible through this episode without seeking the appropriate technical or other professional advice on the particular facts and circumstances that are discussed. This podcast is for informational purposes only. All views expressed therein are those of the host and his guest and should not be considered as being endorsed by nor related to the host or the guest's employers.